testing, 1, 2, 3, 4. This is an interview with Angela Fore for the Oral History Project on Smoky Hollow, fluorescent net minerals at 58 North Bonnier on April 6, 1976 at 1 p.m. Ms. Fore, could you tell us a little bit about yourself and your experiences and your life at Smoky Hollow?
Well, my name is Angela Fore, and my maiden name was Angela Bellina. We came from Europe at my age when I was 8 years old. It was 1913, when we came here with the model. When I came to New York, I came with my parents and two brothers and two sisters. When we came here, we moved down the hall and we bought the house 319 Watts Street. And from there, all my sisters and brothers were married, and I also met my husband and got married there, and I lived there and raised my family. And my first one was 319 Adams Street, and I had my first daughter there. Well, then from there, I bought a home right across from there at 314 Adams Street, and there I had the rest of my family. I had 13 children in all. They were four boys and nine girls. Two of my boys died.
Could you tell us a little bit about your own childhood? Do you recall any of your own experiences as a youngster? What some of the things that you did for activities, some of the games that you might have played?
Do you mean in Europe or here?
No, I mean when you lived in Smoky Hollow.
Well, as a child, I was doing it because I went to school and came home. And of course, I have a girlfriend and boyfriend, but we used to play kick the can or play hound. But there wasn't very much to do with the. Without the, we didn't have as many choices as they have today, but we did have, like, to play with the marble stones, and we have another
you say there wasn't much to do with. There were times when that were just idle, that you didn't do anything?
Oh, no, not that way. You see, there was always something to do. There was always find something to do. Even to have an outside dance with the children, one another, or, as I said, kick the can, or have a cookout with all the bunch of girls and boys. We made our own fun. We did get along very well, but we couldn't have done it today because people weren't more. The children had more than that. We had our own fun.
Could you tell us something before you got married? Some of the cooking and things like this that your mother
fits for you.
Don't say anything.
My mother used to make her own home bread and cookies and pizza, and she would make the different kind of noodles, like say raviolis or cavatiel or all the various different shapes of kind and various shapes kind of necklaces. And that was then we'd have, of course, soup and the meatball, like they call that wedding soup, and we had like the spaghetti meatballs, we had a roast different like either chicken or beef or duck or rabbits, whatever we had. And we always had more than enough to eat. We had things that we made at home.
All right, did you raise your own rabbits and chickens and things?
Not at the time that I was single, because we didn't have a large place to raise those things. We didn't have that to leave out and have you bought everything from here. It's a pleasure to work.
All right, could you tell me then a little bit about your parents?
Well, my parents were very strict.
I was like
15 years old. My mother made her quit school because I couldn't go to school. They were she owned the school. They didn't believe in it. They were just supposed to be a girl shouldn't get more education because they didn't have anything to do for girls. And when I got to my sixth grade, they made me quit. Actually, about 9 months later, met my husband and got married. I was 59 months when I was married.
Now, you say that they didn't believe in education for women or girls. Did they believe in education for men?
Yes, they did. But they could afford to pay for education for any woman. He had come from work and they were very spending to try to make a living. They didn't have the money that's flowing around today at the time. And they got to get education for the public schools,
they agreed on men having an education, but women, they didn't. Do you think it was because they felt that women would get married and then have the responsibility of raising children and keeping a home?
That's right.
All right, then maybe this is what should be again today because of all the markets being flooded with, just say for example, an overabundance of teachers. If it were just the men that had teaching degrees, do you think that the flood market would be as crowded?
Well, I believe that they should have a quota. Either man or woman, as far as that goes, they have too many going to school for the school education, which they have over the quarter that they need, and they should limit it to enough that they could give an education, which they are overflowing. A lot of people are jobless because after their education is done, they're putting all their money at a time, and there is more work for them because there's too many teachers that are educated. They should limit it to as many as they might need.
All right, now, do you think that this holds true only for teaching positions, or is that for all
Well, I believe that they should have some kind of a system to just about an understanding of how many people they need for certain jobs. And the one who said he could make you 100 more than you need, but not thousands and thousands more. Those people are going to be jobless because there's no jobs for America. But the markets are flooded in with more jobless people and they're educated. Okay, let's get back to Smoky Hollow then. A minute, could you tell us anything else that you could recall again on your childhood before we get into your, you know, your own family, your own marriage?
No, I
can't recall that much. It's quite a few years ago. I can't remember. My way to go to the restroom. And the Lord just known that I can't seem ever to forget how he was. We just love him, Murphy Hall. He comes from the most friendly neighborhood. And we did have a lot of fun together, first as a child and then as a grown up, because we had the most wonderful neighbors there. And it was like one big family. Everybody's trouble was my trouble, or my trouble was their trouble. And our joy was each other's joy. We just enjoyed each other. To this day, we still call each other. There's such a love there that it's never will be existing in any place in the world, I don't believe.
I think we had a real close community in Smoky Hollow. When you had your first baby, did you go to the hospital to have your baby?
No. My children were born all at home, but four. I had four in the hospital.
All right, when you had your child, children at home, did your husband take care of the delivery, or did the neighbors come in, or just?
No. My first child, I had a midwife, and then from then on, the doctors would come to the house. They would come to the house and deliver the baby, and then they would come every day to visit the child until it was a week old. We had very good doctors.
Right, now when you say a midwife, is that a visiting nurse or
a registered woman that delivers babies, just like takes a doctor to do that? She's a registered, they call her midwife.
All right, then they pretty much then took over the delivery and this, and then the doctors, of course, then would follow up on it. All right, did you find that satisfactory, or did you think that going to the hospital to have your babies was
I'll be honest with you, that the hospital after delivering is more it's a little better because you can stay there and relax, but at the delivering time I'd rather be at home, because when your child is born at home, it comes natural, and we don't have to take so much medication, and it's so different. But see, every time I went to the hospital, I was sick. I got sick with the delivery. At home, after the child was born, I was all right. But at the hospital, they would take care of you after you got sick, but they made you sick, so they had to take care of you. They couldn't leave you die.
All right, do you think it may have been probably because at home, you got up and started moving around to take care of your newborn?
No, it wasn't that. I think it all had to do with the medication they give you.
With the medication?
Yeah.
All right, but your children all were all right. There wasn't any illness from them.
No, they all were all right.
All right, now could you tell me a little bit about, as your family grew, well, how did you provide for them? What kind of food did you cook for them? And
as my children grew up, I used to always make my own bread. I had a large oven outside, and I put maybe 100 pounds or more. I mixed flour and make bread, and I would have enough for the week. And I'd make pizza and bread at the same time and just bake it at one time. And I'd have the week, and the whole neighborhood would be there eating pizza because they could smell it from a mile long. Whenever they knew there was bread in the oven and pizza going, everybody was there. So I'd have to turn out to make at least 10 or 15 pounds worth of pizza before I could make my bread. But we enjoyed doing that very much. And then I used to make a lot of homemade spaghetti and homemade, and then we had to that. And then I had my own garden, and we had beans from the garden, string beans, and Swiss chard, and olives, and cabbage, and spinach, all that stuff we had from the garden. And we also had chickens, rabbits, And we had our own eggs, and that was all together. We had enough to raise my family while we raised our own food to feed them. And I don't forget their depression, where everybody was on relief. And we could not get on relief for the reason that my husband worked in machine too. And any employee of machine tube could not get relief. So machine tube had their own store, and they would give us $7 a week worth of groceries from their store. And that would keep us in flour and sugar and salt and maybe potatoes and motherhood, stuff that we couldn't raise ourselves. Stuff that they didn't give at the grocery store, we were able to raise ourselves. So that did that along very well. But we managed. It was very hard to manage, but we did it.
All right, now you say that you got this from the store at the Sheet and Tube. Did they just give you this?
No, they don't. They gave it to us and they charged it. When we got back to work, we had to pay that back. Every payday, they took so much off until we paid off.
All right, then it was like on credit. And they would take it out of the paycheck then.
That's right.
All right. At that time, during the, you mentioned the depression, did you find things pretty rough to get by on? Because I'm sure you had utilities to pay and things of this nature.
It was very hard. There was time that I had a high water bill. Oh my God, you don't pay 3, 4, 5 months. The time was so long, the depression. But I went up to, well, maybe $75, $100 and worked a lot of bill and I guess, and let it go. We just couldn't make the payment. It was hard. And they did have like a little work. For instance, a digging ditches or cleaning something off these companies of the gas and electric and the water. They would have a few work for the money to pay that off. So between that and what type of money, now I'll never forget my husband worked one day during the depression. He worked in a mill and we had ordered a ton of coal. We needed coal because it's cold and we couldn't get it otherwise, you know, if we didn't have the money. So that day work that he did, he paid off the ton of coal and he got 35 cents back. 35 cents. Are you going to come home on a bus? Just imagine getting a payday and not having a penny to go by.
Well, then you say he worked a whole day for a supply of coal.
For one ton of coal.
For one ton. And I'm sure that they weren't being paid that much. But then again, I would imagine the coal wasn't as high then.
No, it was only about $4 or $5, something like that. $4 or $5.
All right. If you were making the kind of money that we are today, then there wouldn't have been any problem, would there?
But everything else was hard to go too. Of course, people have no job. That makes it good. But if they had to get along now with the time of that day, even though you had a big pay and there was no work, well, you could never get along. How would you pay those bills off?
Because everything is so high, so much higher today. Of course, with high wages comes high prices. So. Then I would imagine that bread, if you were to buy bread, like you said, you made your own, everything would have been so much less than it is today, but then still it wouldn't be the homemade, and it wouldn't have stretched this far. All right, Ms. LaFour, could you tell us then a little bit about how long you and your husband were married?
Well, when he died, we were married for 60 years. He was alive today. We've been married 61 years.
Hi, and your husband's been, is deceased now.
For 11 years.
For 11 years. Hi. During your lifetime in Smoky Hollow, how many of those years did you live in Smoky Hollow?
I lived there,
About 40 years of your life. And then you've been out of the hollow then about 30 some years. Is that correct? And your husband is deceased now, and you have the, you have 13 children. You had
four
boys and nine girls. All right, could you reflect back for just a minute in all in the years of the Depression? Is there a certain decade that you recall of what it was like and what you would do if you could to change it?
It's very hard to say. There's a time nothing could have been changed. There wasn't a thing that could have been changed because it was
the water was all gone.
How could you change a depression?
That's not a
rough one. That was for everybody.
All right, was there a depressed feeling amongst the people during Depression? Or were they, did they take it in its stride?
Well, they have, they had to be very meek. They had to keep themselves. A lot of them didn't want to do things that they had to do. A lot of them had to get on soup lines and get a bucket of soup or go and get bread from a different place and bread to feed their family for charity. But thank God we didn't have to do that because if I tried to manage it and do my own, but a lot of people had to meet themselves in the things that they didn't want to do.
All right, it was a matter of survival then that they had to get in these food lines.
Very, very matter of survival.
All right, then you were very, fortunate, even though you had to reimburse them, the company then pretty much took, the sheet and tube company took care of you and your family because your husband was employed there. All right, he was employed at the sheet and tube for how long?
Well, when he died, he must have been employed to see what it was about to. 8 years before that, it was about 58 years.
He worked in the field too. All right, he worked there then for 58 years.
No, in our age, wait, I'm a state.
About 58 years. Okay. Do you recall what the unions were like then?
Well, at the beginning, there was no union.
No union?
No. They checked the union. I don't remember exactly what year they start with the union. It was the they started with the just the very, very slow things like the, so much percent that you had to give or pay increase because the pays were very low. And it wasn't like now. Now they're much, much better. But at the time, it was very slow. Everything that was started was in a level of just the beginning. It started slowly, increasing.
The unions then just were coming into being then. They weren't in full force like they are today. Was it mandatory that everybody join the union at that time?
Well, they almost forced you.
It was almost a foolish thing.
Because the people that were in the union and wanted to stay in the mill, there was a lot of violence. People would be shooting and killing people. That's how bad it was. It was almost a must that you had to join the union. Or even if the company wanted you to be in the mill and stay in there, And if you dare come out, they might hurt your family. You were afraid.
It was mandatory that you got to the union then. Not only to protect your job, but to protect your own life, because they would they resented you if you weren't a union member. Then, as years went on, then I'm sure that it became more organized. And do you recall anything about that at all?
I recall that the leadership was much, much better with the union. Things were shaping up and working better. There was a person more better working conditions. The union made sure that if somebody was laid off for some minor reason, that he would rehire again, because otherwise he would be totally jobless. But with the union support, he was able to get into the work field. They had to give him a job.
All right, then the union then pretty much protected a man's job.
Yes, he did protect these people. Yes.
All right, then getting back to the Smoky Hollow again, then the sheet and tube pretty much provided for your family, and you were still in the Smoky Hollow. Getting back to the Depression for just a minute, and the Smoky Hollow. When the Depression hit and jobs were slowed down, like you mentioned something about your husband working one day for one day pay, could you tell us then what happened then for the things that were store-bought commodities? What would you do then if you didn't have the money to buy it?
Well, we just did without. We did without if we didn't have the money to buy it. There's a lot of things we did without. Sometimes, even if we needed a doctor, we try and do the best we could if we couldn't afford, unless the doctor came to come and do it, you know, for a waiting period. But otherwise, we just had to do without a lot of things.
But did you, you never charged anything?
Well, they wouldn't charge you. They knew you were jobless, they wouldn't give you a charge.
Not even at your neighborhood store?
Well, yes, we did have a little charge account at the neighborhood store. But when the bill comes maybe to $50, they put a stop. They don't want it to go no higher. If the bill was too high, then you couldn't pay that $50, how were you going to pay the $100? So they wouldn't get it.
Or they would allow you so much credit up to a certain point, but then you had to, of course, pay it off, and then you would charge again. Is that pretty much what the people did at that time? I'm sure that there were others that did the same thing. Could you tell us something about the people in Smoky Hollow?
The people in Smoky Hollow, I don't think they need them that way anymore. They just...
Excuse me, Mrs. Ford, please talk a little bit louder.
The people of Smoky Hollow are one in a million. They just don't make people like that anymore. They were the most considered and lovable, and it's hard to describe what kind of a neighborhood, what kind of people that lived there. You had trouble, they were there. If you had joy, they were there. It was just like a great big family. And I don't know, maybe the luxury we have today, we feel, oh my God, we like to live in a better location, a better home. But as far as the neighborhood and the people in it, it was the most wonderful thing in the world. I wouldn't change it for a million years.
Right, you did have some fun things, good times in the Smoky Hollow.
Oh, yes, we did. We certainly did. Although we had our ups and downs, but we got together and we just enjoyed being with each other.
All right, what did you do when you got together?
We talked and we laughed about different things, and we talked about her trouble, my trouble, or the joy we had together. We made a joke of it, and we just laughed. That was just fun. Sometimes we get together and play bingo or Anything at all, just to make our own fun, make our own, that we get together, maybe I'll have a little music box and start dancing. I remember I had one of the record players, and oh my God, I don't believe that there was one of the neighbors that weren't there in my house or on my porch trying to dance in here to the record player. Oh no, it was just beautiful. All the things we have today, it can't compare with the joy we had on the
Turkey Hall. Right, and it was a close community, plus there was
harmony.
Not only harmony, but you had a communication with all of your neighbors. There was more neighborly visits and things of this nature. Where do you have this today?
No, this today, your neighbor, if they say hello, it makes it so hard for them even to say hello when they look outside. They don't bother like they used to do. No, the neighbors today are not what they used to be.
Well, they are pretty much to themselves.
Yeah, to themselves. Yeah.
All right. Getting back then again to the Smoky Hollow, and as the youngsters, I'm sure, grew up, and some of the people got older, and I'm sure that they had not only big weddings, but could you tell us a little bit about the deaths? The deaths, like when somebody died, did they bring them to the funeral parlor?
No. Anybody died, they would stay in the house. They didn't take them to the home. They kept them in the house for 3 days, and everybody came to visit at the house. And they'd bring flowers, there'd be a flower wreath on the door, and the people would come to the house. Even I had two sons there, and I remember very clearly how people were so sympathetic, and they would stay with us night and day. They would just keep coming and bring over like a refreshment, something to. So the family of the death isn't supposed to cook or anything at the time that the casket is in the house. So people kept bringing stuff to keep the family. And they would stay there and keep them company. They wouldn't leave them alone ever. Either one or the other, there always be somebody with the family when there was a death in the house.
All right, they had the wakes then, right, in the home. They took them to the funeral parlors, I'm sure, to have the body prepared and then laid in the coffin.
Yes, but they did later on, but with my two sons, of course, the one that was killed, he was taken care of in the hospital, and then they took him home fixed. But my second son that died, they've been taken to the funeral, and they took care of him right in my house, and they laid him there. They brought the casket empty and put him in.
They just did it right in the home then. They don't do this today, of course. They handle it right at the funeral parlor. All right, this was then pretty traditional. Everybody did this at a time of death. Is that correct?
I believe so.
Everybody had the death right in the home.
Oh, yes, they all had the death.
Did they also all have their weddings in the home? Did they also have the weddings right in the home?
Oh, well, yes. Well, some people that were very rich, but I don't remember any of them, which I mean, I didn't have rich friends. But as far as I can remember, everybody had their weddings in their home.
All right, then the people of Smoky Hollow then were of, you would say, middle class, and they just weren't over abundant with money or anything of this nature, so they couldn't very well go all out. I would imagine then the younger generation after you would probably then went ahead and had weddings and halls. All right, is there anything else Mrs. LaFour, that you could tell us about Smoky Hollow?
Well, I wanted to tell you about the, you see, we do measure the weddings, but I also want to tell you what happens in Smoky Hollow. Now, do you think, when you have a child, and you have the child baptized, there will be a big ceremony, just like a wedding. After you baptize a child, they will have music and food to give anybody that comes. It was just like a big doing after a child is baptized. And everybody would be there. And then there was first Holy Communion. And again, there would be a big gathering with all the neighbors, and they would have refreshments and we'd have music for them. Then there was confirmation, and that also, we had the groups together, the whole neighborhood, and we had refreshments, and we rejoiced together. And then was graduation of the first grade school, and there was rejoicing things together. It was continuously something going on. While you're raising a family, there's always something going on. And the whole hollow would rejoice with the one that's having a certain deal, either baptismal, baptismal, communion, confirmation, or graduation. They would all be together.
It was kind of a family, I mean, a neighborhood gathering then, along with friends or outside of the neighborhood. All right, Mrs. LaFour, could you tell me a little bit then, did you and your family ever go visiting outside of the Smoky Hollow, or did you have your own transportation, or did you take a bus or a streetcar?
We did go visiting, but we had to take a bus. We didn't have cars at the time. And when we did go to visit, we had to take a bus. And the same thing, the people came to visit us, we'd have to come on a bus. But we did visiting, like Camel, Ohio, not that far out, it's a far you could go, but we visited. It wasn't just the Smoky Hollow. We got people together from other places. They'd come there to visit us.
Mrs. LaFour, I understand that they had a thing that they called the clinic. The Belly Clinic?
Yes.
Could you tell me a little bit about that?
Oh, that was the most wonderful thing. Like, they had once a week, they call it Clinic Day, and you bring your children there, and they, to a certain age, how old they were, and they would weigh them, and they would be a doctor there and check them real good and see how they were doing, and if there was any kind of ailment that they needed doctor care, the doctor would take care of it, and they would even give you medicine to take home. And I never recall the little children when they were small, little babies, they would give you the starter, like the pablum, to start feeding the baby, and it was very nice. And now, to a certain age, you didn't even have to go to the doctor, because they couldn't. You could go there once a week, and that was your doctor to care.
All right, now this was a weekly checkup for all children?
For all young children.
Young children. And was this open and was this free?
Yes, that was open to the public.
And it was open and it was free to the general public?
That's right.
No matter what your financial status
was
or how many children or anything of this nature.
Public, yeah.
All right, then this sounds like it would be a good thing today too then.
Yes,
if they have this.
Yeah.
Because I had heard somewhere along the way where they have this, and I thought it would be worth mentioning. All right, then, now, is there anything else, Mrs. LaFour, that you would like to include in this tape?
Let's see that.
All right, could you tell me why, what made you move out of the Smoky Hollow?
What made me move out of Smoky Hollow is that my children grew up and my house was too small. Well, I have 11 children and only a four-room house. wasn't found too small. We had to squeeze in there. So as they grew up, I had to get a larger home. And that was the only reason I moved from there, because the house was getting too small for my family.
All right. If there is anything else that you'd like to add now.
But I do want to say that I have a lot to thank God for giving me such a place to live, because out of that place, I've raised a wonderful family. I raised a family of 11 children, which are alive today, and I have 4 school teacher and a nurse instructor and an attorney and a broker, real estate broker in the family, which they all came from down the Smoky Hall, and I am very proud and happy. The opportunity to be what they are today, because they want to do something for themselves, and they look their way for what they accomplish. And I am very happy and thankful.
All right, then you feel that the Smoky Hollow, that your children were products of the Smoky Hollow.
Yes, and they want to do something to show the world that you don't have to be born in a leprous place to become what you are. You are what you are, not in the place you're living in. And that place was one of the best places to be before.
All right, then you don't think that you have to have all the luxuries of life to be a good example or a good citizen?
No, you don't have to.
All right, Ms. Wilfor, was there anything else that you could think of that we didn't get on the tape?
Well, I want to quote that my hopes and prayers were always that my children would be and have more than I ever had. And thank God, He did what I asked for my prayer. My prayers were answered.
I want to thank you very much, Mrs. Before, for this time that you've allowed me to come into your home, and for this lovely interview, and for permitting me to tape you. Thank you.
Thank you.
And he come in over here, you know, to go to college. Well, this house, him and his brother, and him and another fellow there for a room. She got a 6th room in there, you know, another house. So they give him a room, you know. Little by little, is it another word, at the end, the Mary Barbara, you know, that's just a dot, you know. And she is doing busy. She had a bad leg, for it seems, you know. They used to come in and say, the minister said, I can have a little wine. I know you can make one. Well, you know, you give it to her. My wife, she had a heart, big heart. She all used to come, but she was good. So Bessie, Mary that boy, a South boy, Indian, I think, school boy, you know how to. So he stayed in there and took care of his daughter's mother. He said it was mother, but she was a godmother first to begin. But she raised this girl and took care of her. And he had 2 children, 2 boys. And he used to be a very respectable man, you know. He's a South man, you know. And they came in, his father used to come over here, the South. They like her, you know. They like to be over here. But he says, no, they like a better South, you know. His father. And he stayed here till he sold the house and went into California. The boys were 2 years old or 3 years old. The children was like sick, you know what I mean, but all of the imagination sometimes. the climate change here. Well, maybe it does, you know. You want to sell me the house? I said, Johnny, I can buy the house. You know, I ain't had no money. You want to give me another house for $4,500? No, $4,000. Take it back. So this sold for this people here for $4,500, the land contract. So, and that's why can we stay here, the neighbor. Here we have a colored woman that bought this house in the corners. She was in North Carolina. Big woman. And she had a husband, you know, used to work for Carnegie too, Brow Hill. She used to be in a right little bargain number, whatever it was doing, you know, it's doing all right. She had no children. But his brothers had 70 children or 90 children, I don't remember just exactly. But she took care of five of them children, take over here, you know. She make them children work, you know, 5 or 6 years old, washing clothes down the basement. My wife was sick. You don't want to see that. Well, that's his rural regulation. Rural. So they used to have a room, you know, furnished room in there. My wife was sick. And then he always used to call, Mr. Roussel, how you feel? The porch, you know how it is? He says, I know rest last night. He says, no, he says, standing right across the window with us. He says, you like them boy making a noise, he says. Oh, okay, then Mr. Roussel says, I'm sick myself, I says. I don't want no noise. Next day, he chased them, pulled them, pulled us out. You know, the rumor. Yeah, no kidding. What the Hickson, you know, call the people. She stayed in there, and they chased him out. Says, we don't want no noise. I says, I know how you feel, sir. I'm sick myself. When you're sick, you don't rest how you feel. Couldn't ever. Call the people. Mm-hmm. They just call them. Call out over there. And come out over here, calling the telephone, says, how you feel, how this, how that, you know. But what do you expect to go? You can't find any better neighbor. So we still continued. So the other fellow, she passed away after she got a heart attack, she passed away before my wife passed away. And she had a woman being in there, Miss Smith. And she had a divorce with her husband, but she got a kid. She had a girl, a boy, and she donated the house to her as long as she'd even take care of her husband. He would take care of her husband, and the house was his, the trouble was his. And the husband passed away, excuse me. Now she passed away last year. She was very neighbor that we had it. When they don't see me one day, you know, I say outside, they call me telephone. Mr. Zilla, he used to call me Alfonso. Alfonso, how you feel? No feel good, I don't see you. Because we used to see it outside. That's them being very neighbor, and that's why they keep me to stay here.
The warmth of the people then is what enticed you to keep on staying in Smoky Hollow.
That's what the Smoky Hollow was being, and then I stay here and I'm reason and try to doing something, you know, and that's what it keeps me in Smoky Hollow. Smoky Hollow was the best district of class of people working on, all love one each other. It don't matter whatever they don't fight Polak, Slovak, Croatian.
It didn't matter what the
no matter what
they did.
We had that as Carolina used to be right in the corners in there, the Shumet. We used to be neighbors. Coming over here, coming over there, the neighbors, you leave over here, go over there. They come and leave to you. Every hour, anything happened, he came in there, turn your house upside down. Straighten up. And that's what they're making stuck here in the middle.
All right, there was the neighborness. Neighborly neighbors that would come and visit, and you could go visit them anytime, they could come and visit you anytime.
He was in the command, and he was in, he was going in there. We'd have a banquet, like I said, picnic to one of each other, you know.
So that's what kept you here, and then you had so many good times together with your neighbors.
Now, not finished, because now we ain't got anywhere. Everybody sad, you know. People are leaving, you know what I mean? It look like the smoke all to get down low, because, well, the college is taking all the most of the things. And the old people, you know, my class is all gone. They ain't got a much lady. Only got one that fellow down over here named Andy. I don't forget the last name. He's an old man. He's 91 years old, and he walked like a bird and that. And he had a bad sickness. He had a bad operation. But see, to me too, I had an operation, you know, and then I had a little heart attack 3 years ago, and then I got a cataract removal of both eyes. Now I'm sick. Now I try to get along, but I still get along all right.
Mm-hmm. All right, but you're still able to manage yourself, and you do.
So far, I manage yourself. My daughter-in-law coming down here, helping me, the cooking and the doing. We are getting. I mean, I stay these got a boy here, Louis, you know, fourth boy. But he no good to what he's got to do. But he's all right. You're going out and buy what you want, this and that. We manage.
Mm-hmm.
So far, I manage the things in there. And sometime I do the things, and I call my daughter, my son says, come down here. We have a supper. We have a dinner, you know what I mean. And I still manage myself.
Okay, and you still have your family come in and visit
oh,
you.
Oh, yeah.
And, have them for dinner and things like this. All right, Mr. Roselli, I know that, from what I've heard, that you're very, very proud of all your family.
Oh.
Would you like to just make a little comment about what you think about your son, Don Roselli?
Well, it's a little hard to do, you know. Don will always start to be a good boy.
He was always a good boy.
It's quiet. No trouble. All the time it used to be get out of the trouble. He used to laugh to me and say, Pop, get out of here. Don't fight them. Don't hold the hand. Don't be, you know what I mean? All the time. He wanted to be a very quiet man. The beginning. Well, you know how it is. We don't have no possible money to send him to the college, you know what I mean? But he used to be doing good in the school. All to be in the school. Came number one. I never have a call for him in the school. You know, in the public school. I might have a call of a ref, I might have a call of a Joe. Matter of fact, you know what I mean, what the teacher is, you know, because the teacher was the particular, and he had a role, you know, to be teacher. And you ought to obey what the teacher is doing. Well, finally he got a break. You know, the boys, they only weigh 120 pounds. You know, the wind, the rain, you know. And they did good. When they went in there, you know, his, he ironed himself with the pants, because you know what I mean? We can't give him a clothes enough from the high school to be dressed up like, you know, he ain't going like this now. That boy go to college to make. You know what I mean? So before, he wants you to go neat and clean in the school, the public school and high school. So he did yourself work yourself up. You know. He did rain and he used to play his plays the hat off. He used to be good, you know. They broke his head one time to play for the football down in Water State in their Amherst, and right on the corner. We get the ball, say, take him to the doctor, $5. They take him to the stitch. I said, oh, why you do that? He never get mad. You all have been in this big movie boy.
He never got angry.
No. Because, you know, that's my son. And so, he went out When they come in, they've got to sell the name in the school, you know what I mean? A scholarship, you know, you don't want to put it in as in a team, you know, because it's Marvin. Well, what does it happen? They have a fellow with the name Paul Burko. He used to be a graduated for the Ohio State, you know. So Lindsay was the coach of football from the game. And I told him, I said, put a bomb of reserves in there. I said, see what he can do. He says, he can't do anything to have in the bench, you know what I mean? I said, see what he can do. So he wouldn't play. He wouldn't be a little devil to sneak a tutor and one thing and make himself a name. And Lindsay got a soon love him. And used to win every game, whatever it is to believe. The fellows after that, it's good. They no question about it. They came in a champion of any high school that time. You know, a championship, you know. And it's, everybody likes him. So when they win the graduate, they graduate. Dyke, you know, the one who touched with the coach. Some way they recommend they go general, Beverly Falls, you know. Win Beverly Falls, you know. Everybody surprised, a little man, you know, small, 125 pounds. What they can do? What's happening? When down there, I didn't have no money, it was scholarship, you know. He works with pan, you know, the kitchen, you know, for the room, you know. All I had to do is for the head of doing for the book. But really, I stand by myself. I used to be getting a dollar here, a dollar there, you know, even making a dollar for the sale of a bushel of pepper and things, you know, every dollar. I used to help the wash the clothes, you know, do their clothes, because she always think that she was sick. Well, anyhow, he got a bigger name up there than the money went down there. We started there, they got a bigger name down there. They used to name him, they make the football name Roselli Day.
They called it Roselli Day.
Okay. And I told him, and he came in one day, he says, you know, I was low, you know, myself, I can't do it. He says, Pa, I'm going to quit the school. You know, they had a job, you know, they went to work. But I told him no. I said, don't you do it. I said, we get along some way, somehow. Now, the oldest brother used to work down the Republic. They had a job down the Republic. And I told the brother, I said, nah. We, you know, your low class is coming out. But we can get the name some way, somehow, you know what I mean, the graduate. I said, when you get paid, help your brother. You know what I mean, they need me. But he helped himself. So I said, we can't do nothing, you know what I mean? I'm gonna, you stay down there, you graduate, you make a bigger name down there yourself. It's for everybody crazy. So they graduate, you know what I mean? And then when they graduate, they come back in, you know, they stayed, well, we don't have no job. No, really, you can't get a job if you want to buy a job, you know what I mean? When he used to work on the playground, he's in the summertime, you know, make a few dollars, he can buy this. And he was good, in other words. And that's what it is. He graduated, and then he went in the army. He sort of service, the other way, going to service. But he went in the service, you know, yeah, he had to be sent away out of Alaska for 3 or 4 days, and he applied for the education they had, you know, and then they sent him to Washington in a school for 6 months. But you know, them school, the military school, you know, supposed to be, but he had done the 6 months, it's supposed to be a year, 6 months, especially, and he wouldn't come out the first lieutenant, you know.
First
lieutenant. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then he got the lieutenant, and then when he graduated, when he got a discharge, he is a captain. Then he came back over here, you know, Dyke was his name, and then he offered him a job in California. Well, he married, that time was married him. He had a child, he had Rose, the old child. And he can be a teacher, he can be a coach in California, you know, for so much money. And then he come back there and talk. I could talk to him out of Cleveland and Youngstown College. Then he was an assistant coach football, you know, like we surreal, you know. Then when he come out, he had a chance basketball and need the teacher, they put him for teacher. And when you be a teacher, you got to leave the baseball. You only have one teacher. And that's what he been taught. Been teaching the basketball so long and he done himself good. You know what I mean? And that's the end. He's a good boy.
He's a good boy and he's still a good man. And
then he worked himself up. And when he come back, he says, Father, you know, he stayed with the mother-in-law because then he had no. They had a home down over here in Verona Street, you know. No house, one house, normal house, you know. He says, Father, this is a lot of houses, $1,000. I said, son, buy it. He says, go ahead to buy it. He says, if you don't want to buy it, you can buy it. He says, we'll get some money, $1,000. It's four room house. You're going to remodel. A really good boy. No porch. No nothing. You know what I mean? So the remodel of the house, paid a cotton deal, $1.50, you know, spare the time for the cotton deal. And he started learning the cotton deal, came in and worked. So I helped him digging in the sewer, you know, because he had no sewer, you know what I mean? One day I put in a flare out myself. The sewer is about 10 feet deep. That's a good deal down there. And it was some. I tried to help him, you know what I mean? What I can help, but I can't help him. So anyway, that's why in Greenland, they build a house, they remodel, they bigger them. And the solar house went by the left up there and builds up there and he's up there. And that's what it cannot be in.
All right, so then I'm sure that all the rest of your boys did just as well.
All the rest of them, all is good, the boy, don't worry about it. But he's the only one that applies to the, he's the talk of anything else, you know how to handle it between yourself, no talking.
He handled everything easily.
Easily can be possible, you know.
Right, with no fuss or
no fuss, no manners, any troubles, no nothing. He's very, very quiet. He get along in a way they wanted it possible. Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure that it's because of like you said, he always liked to be quiet.
Be quiet, mm-hmm. Be honest, you know, being quiet, being do whatever he's supposed to do. In other words, improve yourself for the beginning, the end, the commandment. So that's why the dad got a job up there and stayed up there, you know, so he been doing it, so then I had to go to the school to take the master degree, degree, because when you being a coach, you got a teacher too, you know what I mean, and he went to Pittsburgh. But he was working on, and he worked his head off. He worked for the cotton deal, you know. He junior, July, August, you know, he make a little money. In other words, he went in there and increased himself up. I never be able to help much myself, you know what I mean? Because they had a big family at the beginning. Then the job I had, you know, I had a job working in the mill. Just you can believe it, you know, when you got a family. So, and that's what it is. Then they got four children. God bless all my grandchildren. Now I got a whole granddaughter, grandson, son.
Grand-granddaughter and son, huh?
All of them. That's what it is. It did all right. And I'm proud for him. I'm proud of all because the other boys, he went to the work himself up to him, but he worked himself. He's a young guy, so he went to work for the government, he made himself, now he retired, you know what I mean? He gets enough money himself. I don't need nothing, you know, but I need something. I know what it is.
Right. I'm sure that they would take care of you.
They call me, you need something, you don't need, I don't need anything. I told them, shit, I don't need anything. The way it is, I work my head off. I know I'm working hard. And hard job. But I'll get out. I make it for myself. If today, if I need help, I know where to get. If you need help, you know where to get.
All right, Mr. Vizzelli, do you think that no matter where you would have lived, that you would have made it and your family would have done as well as they did?
Well, I think so.
If you lived anywhere, even though it weren't the same.
Don't matter. See, I used to live on the east side. You know.
Mm-hmm.
I had neighbors all over. Even the Scott people, as you know, used to live in a neighbor of mine. They used to be Irish. And immediately Irish was coming in, of course the property was coming in, and they're jealous whether they want this or not. I told him, I said, Mister, I do want to fight with you. I said, this is the deed. I said, if you think you got something in you, you take it. I said, but this is what I got. I bought 5 feet land, it's my 5 feet land. If you agree, all right. If you don't agree, well, you find out yourself. You go to court. So I talked with the man. Owner sold me the home. He said, Mr. Russell, you tell Mr. Jim Jones, the gentleman, he says, if you don't shut up, tell him you can stop to the sewer is in the driveway, in your driveway. This your land. Don't worry about that. I'll send back. This Mr. Beans, he called him. And he went for the contract. And when they got $3,150, says, I'm going to business now. I'm making a business. I said, what are you going to do? He went and built that Grandview, them new house, you know, that time in Minnesota, for $300-$400 down, and all I had neighbors. The neighbor came in over here next to me. They had two brothers in the city. Another one was married. The girl was married, and they had all the people. They came in and helped me. I dig in the cellar. All used to come in and dig in. Give me a hand. This fellow says was. Say, hey, Mr. Sell, I help you. Even the Jew that was back with me with digging a house, he came in and helped me build the foundation. Every once in a while I stayed, I had a good neighbor deal with them people, you know. I never was so hungry, and he never was hungry. I said, so whatever he is, he is. I don't know. All of you used to be common neighbor, of course. All of you didn't get along. Oak Street, I had a sweet time. I live in there for a couple, 2-3 years. The people used to live in there. Used to work for years in the railroad. They used to be foreman. And the next day, they had a postman. And I said, yeah, used to be the mailman. He had 5 or 6 kids, just as much as I was as they had, you know. And he used to come out in the house and say, Mr. Russell, how you doing? How's this and that? You know, he says, well, I got a job. He says, don't pay much money. He says, he had a little house in there. If you need anything, he says, I can come in and help you. You know, give you advice, you know. Mm-hmm. All of it, we all used to be great things everywhere I used to live, no trouble.
All right, they were, you had great neighbors then. Huh? I say you had great neighbors.
Great neighbors.
And you worked together as a team.
Everything was good. If you was doing something, you need me, I'll go there. Don't question, don't charge, no nothing. Not hungry for one or the other. All of it used to be. Hook Street was to be in my neighbors. Everyone was good. Winfield Street. You know, all of it was me and Italian, in other words. And you know, them Irish, Swede, Germany, it was kind of jealous of having Italian people around them. But I got a queen now. Mm-hmm. I got a queen now. Friends come in and the other Italians come in. So, then it turned out everything is smooth.
Well, was this true then in Smoky Hollow too?
In Smoky Hollow too. Here in Smoky Hollow, for the one. Everybody. I used to work in a cashier's in there. He wanted to give me a job. Barton, I says, I don't want a job, Barton. I don't want to. Come on and help me. I says, I got a job, I got enough. I said, I don't want to be doing. Mm-hmm. So they all used to come in, whatever you want, whatever you do. Mr. Maloney, you know, Mr. Maloney, when he left it down over here, he had it doing down there. Mr. Silver says, you can put a hot water in the furnace. I said, why not? He said, no question, nothing. Buy your material and I'll do it. Yes, you do. Great friend. Mm-hmm. You know, it was a great thing. It's every way we do. We had a company. We had to get together, party. No fuss, no nothing. Never we had to go for the neighbor.
And there was no argument. It was always one helped the other, no matter
one helped the other one, no argument. Whatever is going to pass in the past. Laughing, dancing, the things in there. And that's what they're making the world. The world was being great things down over here in the Walnut Street. And I said, oh, what I was, because I believe it come the sickness, Pearl Street, out of Pearl Street, they all was mean to me. We had this service, you know, when I was been doing, watch my kids, and my wife was sick, he going over there, watch my kids, feed my kids, you know, and they come in and say, Mr. Russell, take them to the doctor, see what they can do. They say, you do. They give them advice, you know, they're doing. I said, appreciate it.
All right.
And she got a sick too. So she had to be, well, I move out, they had to move out.
Yeah, and then everybody looked out for their neighbors, good or bad.
They looked out for me, whatever it was after, whatever it was after.
All right, Mr. Azalea, I wanted to mention two, or ask you about two different things that you mentioned in the tape. Number one, you said something about this woman from North Carolina when she moved on the house on the corner of Adams and Walnut, that she took numbers. Could you explain what the numbers game was a little bit?
Which one? Is?
The one that lived on the corner. You said the lady from North Carolina.
Oh, that's North Carolina.
Yeah, well, now you said that.
Oh, yeah.
What were the numbers? What kind of numbers was she taking?
The room in the house?
No. You said she used to take down numbers.
Oh. It used to be bug number.
They call that the bug then.
That's right.
Now what do you mean, what happened? Was it a gambling thing?
Well, that was making a few dime and nickel. You know, this is right. If you want to play, you know, just like to play a game.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to play, you play. You know, she used to get it, and sometimes, you know, you hit, you know, for nickel and dime. Sometimes you don't hit, so sometimes you can play all you want, you know. You don't have to play. That's no. But just to be the people used to making money, happy, to play, you know, and making a day work.
Mm-hmm.
Pick up them numbers. You know, used to call them a pick number, pick up them, right. You come in and says, Kenny says, you want to write the number? And you pick up your number, what you want. You put in 2 cents, a nickel, a dime, whatever it is. You get in the head, the fellow says, they come in and pick it up, take them down, the head of a bank, you know, just like the bank, you know. That's why you call them bank. When the number come out, if the number come out, you pay you off, you pay people give you so much money. 3-1, 4-1, 5-1.
All right, then this was kind of a gambling thing. Was this legal at that time?
No, legally. You got to be high. If you had a catcher, you had a slip, you know. Because everybody, nobody was watching much. That's no legal.
It was not legal.
No,
okay.
That's a bootleg they used to call it.
No, it was kind of like bootlegging.
That's right. That's an aside. They used to call it bootleg.
All right. Now, I was going to ask another thing. Did they have bootlegging in the during that time?
When the country went dry, they all had a bootleg. Remember that?
Mm-hmm. That was kind of like during the days of Prohibition.
Prohibition.
Uh-huh. Could you tell us a little bit about that?
So, you see, take like Sandy, you know, you used to live back to your house. He was big fellas, you know. They're making moonshine, you used to call it. Making whiskey, in other words. That's what you call it. He used to call him a moonshine, you know. And he used to wholesale, you know. And he used to retail, you know. You go for gallon, 5 gallon, 10 gallon, whatever it is, you know, blah, blah, blah. Now take Louis. What the heck is the name of this? He used to live on the corner of Darbon and Emerald. He used to be good there. He used to make it. Right on this house. They had a tunnel. You know. The cop used to go in there. You know what I mean? It's when you pay, you know. So he was a policeman, I'm a maker. I says, Kenny, I can make this. What is it? Whatever I make, I'll give you so much money, you know. So the policeman was down there many times. So what happened? He wants cigarettes, he wants this, he wants money. So he, for Louis Labette. Mm-hmm. And he cut the big up on fingers and said, Jesus, everything is here, it's the heat, the drink, you know, one of this, one of that, then you gotta pay. So they got somebody, then he must be squealed, you know, to the federal man, the state man. He showed me he was known where the door was in the wall, where they're gonna get in, you know, and they got in, it was right in the tunnel, you know, the tunnel, what it is, making the tunnel, you know, right in the on the ground. And a pair of things in there. And the federal man came in. So the federal man is, you know, when you conduct to the federal man, you're finished. There's no money involved. They used to go, when the they used to go, the minimum. The one to catch your name, you know, it used to be 90 days in jail, $1,000 a part. It was 18 months. So, but the people used to be by, no matter whatever it is. Throw out the things in there. Next, right across the street, 8 barrel of mesh, they used to call them, you know, the weather making the moonshine. The policeman drove out of some bottle of the window. All of you right down over there, that's supposed to make the moonshine. Bootleg. Mm-hmm. Oh, you know. And that's all. All over.
It was all over the country, though.
It was almost all over the country, very few states. But if they catch you, you catch you.
Yeah, but there, it was.
It's a prohibition, you know what I mean?
Prohibition. It was illegal.
Yeah,
and
no illegal as they do until it come out. Until it come out, when I think, I don't remember just exactly, it'd be a beer, you know. The beer come out the first. Mm-hmm. You know, they can make a beer. And of course the brewery always closed. Smith Brewery, you know, had a Renner Brewery, used to call him, out in the south side. He used to make a beer, you know. Mm-hmm. Well, he'd been closed. He used to make another beer, he called him, like a suffering. So the people would buy him, you know. Then come out the law, Roosevelt come out, remember Roosevelt, the president says, that's industry, you know what I mean? And everybody started making beer. Beer come out in the country, you know. And after 6 months of the state, the law passed, you can have liquor, you know. And steady got it. Steady was the worker of the moonshine. You know, it's though legal, that's controlled. That's you that was being put in jail. Paid a fine. Instead of making it now, somebody making now that. Bootleg stuff.
Mm-hmm. So still, some people still make it today.
Yes, they'll make it today. Some places you can buy them, you know, mm-hmm. Them things in there. But that's what it was doing. The people is now like they had almost one house, the other. In other words, a lot of people used to make a living.
Just by bootlegging.
Making about bootleg. Mm-hmm. Peddle bootleg, you know. It's making the money. But nobody got rich. Remember that. No. I can't think of nobody because the law catch you. They don't, hardly if the city catch you, they don't put you in jail, you know. $150, $200 a fine, get out, making it some more. Mm-hmm. You know, but no you could. You know, I ain't tell you that. Even used to be the city. Used to trust you. If you had a one to go to court to charge you $150, $200, if you don't have no money, you know what I mean? You put you in jail. Pay $50 next time, like a mortgage.
Yeah, like a charge.
Like a charging account. You know that. Then go ahead and do it. That's all the world was.
But that was a terrible way to have to live in that constant fear of being caught all the time.
All the time. There'd be come out the eagle, you know, and the beard. And when the beard has come out, I was myself, I had fellows over there in the store in the corner of Webber Street, and I wanted not to tell them, he's put in the beer garden. I said, take the grocery, Charles Negro. Well, you maybe you remember, maybe not. Says, Tom, says, he's put the grocery in the back and he's opened the beer garden. The beer come out. I say, only cost $200 license, you know. He don't want to do it, you know. He had a little money, I didn't have no money. But he used to leave with that property, it was mine then, you know. So, and the people, that's the way they started making that things in there, they come out. After 6 months, they come out the whiskey, the liquor, they call it. The liquor was being very good, because you're making a profit to 200% or not. So that's what a lot of people started in the business.
Right, they went into, there was a larger margin of profit then after liquor became legalized.
Yeah, well, that's equal.
Right, it was legal then. And yeah, of course it had to have the state sticker on it.
Oh yeah, you're going to buy whiskey, you have a state.
But even in spite of all this, they still are bootlegging today.
Oh, still they have some, yeah. That'll been to have a long time. They've been cut a few, yeah. At the equal, you know what I mean? The people's in here, they ever had a beer garden. They used to get that moonshine and sell them for good whiskey, and somebody got a cut, you know, and now too, you know. The lost license, you know, suspend license, or you say, the 30 days, the 15 days. We would do an equal, I say, equal as a deal. If you had a equal, the inspector used to come in and test your whiskey in the bar, you know. Because when you was by bar, the whiskey, you had to go to the liquor store, they call it. Mm-hmm. You had to buy, bring the state number, the license. Your license, you gotta get the permit. What's your number? You gotta get in there, and you know you have to reduce how many bottles you get, how many things you get.
All right, it wasn't like today. You could go in and buy as much as you want.
Today you're gonna go, all sell one thing, and retail is another thing. Mm-hmm. You go in there, you're gonna buy all the whiskey you want. Mm-hmm. You know, you don't mind. But one time, you know, they had a ticket. You buy a limit. He used to come out to give you 2 bottles a month, 30 days, 250, you know. Mm-hmm. And he had a card, the punch your card, every time you go in. But no, you don't give you no more.
Mm-hmm. You don't have any cards today.
You was outside, you know what I mean? You could buy the bar, the business, the tavern had his own court. The people outside had a court, you know what I mean? It's so many. But if you don't use your card, you can get a card. If you don't use, you can give me the card, you know, mm-hmm. and buy it for me. But that other for equal.
Right, everybody had a card then, and if you didn't use it, you left your neighbor had it.
If you don't want to go and buy, because the tavern can't sell you bottles.
You couldn't buy it in the tavern?
No.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
They don't lie. They don't know how. They don't lie. But you had a card. Mm-hmm. They allow you two or three a month. Mm-hmm. But every time you go, you punch your card. And they give you so many, and then you finish. When you go in over there, the whole card is had all the punch. You know, the whole of it, you know, give you. You got to wait for next month.
All right, you couldn't buy it. Once you used
you
up
can
your
buy it
punches.
When your card is run out.
Okay. Or you had to borrow somebody else's card, and they probably did that.
Well, a lot of people who don't sell. You know, like
right.
I say, friends, I use two fifths, you know. You don't use 1/5, you know what
right.
I mean? Well, after month, every month you got to get a new card.
Mm-hmm.
You understand?
Yeah.
Your card is always doing no good. Well, it's a do you a favor. You want to hear. Go get your whiskey. You go get your whiskey, man. Hold your card. And that's what it is. But it's paying you to be the good lady, you know. Next to the whiskey. And southern bars, because the whiskey they had so many, the limit. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And so it was in inspector. The money, you know, they actually got to pay the tax, you know. Now,